and welcome to Out and Proud with me, Trevor Keegan. This week, I'm delighted to be joined from BBC Manchester by Dr. Adeline Berry, intersex and transgender researcher, artist, writer and activist. They are also a board member of Intersex Ireland. Now, there is so much to chat about with Adi that, to be honest, we could probably make an entire series about just them. And then it would probably take another several more to cover the intersex experience fully. But today we have only little under half an hour, and Adi has generously agreed to share some of their personal experiences of growing up as an intersex person in Ireland, some insights from the research into the lives of older intersex people, and some thoughts on how we might reduce the stigma that so many intersex people identify as an isolating and othering factor in their lives. Adi, I suppose we should probably get some explainers out of the way first, because I know there will be people listening who are a little unsure about intersex. So for starters, what is intersex?
Okay, so intersex is, and thank you first of all for having me on. Any chance to talk about my research, I'm happy to bore the pants off anyone. Intersex is an umbrella term for a wide variety of naturally occurring bodily variations that fall outside of what strict medical binary definitions of what might be considered male or female. Intersex variations can affect your hormones, your gonads, your chromosomes, and your sex organs. And there is about 40 variations listed. Some people have more than one variation. Some people, for example, so most people, when their child is born, they're expecting it to check all the boxes on being a typical boy and a typical girl. And so for a lot of parents, the first time they find out about that there's anything outside of this is when their child is born intersex. And there's quite a lot of us. According to the UN and other experts, we make up about 1.7% of the population. So to put that in perspective, Russia is about 1.8% of the population. People with red hair are 2%. People with green eyes are 2%. So everybody has most likely met an intersex person, but you may not have realized, and they themselves may not know they're intersex for a variety of reasons, because there's very low rates of diagnoses, which we can get into. Some intersex variations are very apparent at birth, as mine was. Some appear in puberty, and then some are discovered post-mortem, and the person may have gone their whole life without noticing, or they knew but they didn't know it was related to something else. Some people are born with they'll have an ovary on one side and a testy on the other, or you might have XY chromosomes, which would be typical for a male, but then you're also born with a small uterus and a shallow vagina, for example, or you have XXY chromosomes, and they call that Klinefelter syndrome. It's about one in every 600 children assigned male at birth, according to the Klinefelter Syndrome Association in the UK. And there's a lot of Klinefelter people don't get diagnosed because medical professionals aren't as educated on as they could be. But when they hit puberty, there's a lot of breast growth, wider hips, things like that would be associated more with a typical female development in puberty, which can be pretty rough if you identify as a boy. So that's a...
And sometimes as well, there can be the confusion, can't there, between intersex and trans?
Okay, so yeah, it's a whole minefield here, and especially as I think everyone's aware, there's been a massive anti-trans moral panic for the past 10 years. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a great time to be trans on this planet, but it's gotten worse recently. So for intersex people who are not trans, the attention is particularly unwelcome. But transgender and intersex mean two entirely different things. So I just went over what intersex is, a brief explainer. But for transgender, it's basically you do not identify with the sex you were assigned at birth. But there is an overlap. So, for example, I mentioned Klinefelter people a moment ago, XXY chromosomes, which again is a shortened description of something that's a bit more complex than that. So in studies with wide samples of people with Klinefelter syndrome, about a third did not identify with the sex they were assigned at birth. And in wide samples of trans people, about one third had Klinefelter syndrome. So there is some overlap. Also, something that happens. So when intersex children are born and we are born somewhat ambiguous sexually, doctors make a determination on whether you're going to be a boy or a girl, as was the case in at my birth. And this is based on the theories of somebody called Dr. John Money. And you can find out, because we won't have time to really get into it, but there's a movie called Everybody that came out last year that I highly recommend from Focus Features, and it features my my colleague Sean Saifa-Wall. And it's just a story of three intersex activists in the UK, or in the US, sorry, and their lives. But it does a good job of explaining the story of John Money and his pretty famous patient and tragic patient, David Reimer.
So, but, Addy, sorry to cut across you there. Addy, that pretty much clears up the meaning between the two and the differentiation. And I think it's better to set out that stall before we get into the chat properly. You mentioned there intersex as an umbrella term used to describe people born with sex characteristics that don't fit into the typical notions of male or female bodies. And that typical question, of course, is it a boy, is it a girl when a child is born? What was your story, just in more detail?
So it's opening up a whole other branch here, but there was a drug that was very popular, given to about at least 10 million women between the 1930s and the 1970s, called diethyl stilbestrol, which is a very powerful synthetic estrogen. And it was given out first without FDA approval, and it was manufactured by a number of drug companies and given to women with a history of miscarriages, like my mother. And so she was on that drug. And so she was guaranteed a daughter from the get-go. And as a result, my parents decided to name me after an aunt who died tragically in the 20s. And then by coincidence, I was born on her birthday. And when I did legally change my name through deed poll, I went with the first name I was ever given. But when I was born intersex, my parents, my mother's are particularly superstitious. I think we all are. I am. I don't walk under ladders. I don't walk through circles of mushrooms. So, I mean, I think if you're Irish, you're superstitious to some degree.
Definitely.
So I was born, and it's something that came up in my research, which we can get into later, is that it's actually quite common for an intersex child to be considered, unfortunately, a curse on the family, as I was. And my mother would refer to me as an abomination, and the house with me underneath was a den of iniquity. One of the things that intersex people bring up a lot is, like, we need education about ourselves, but also we need education for, like, rather than surgery, we need education for the families, because this is the first time they even find out that intersex even exists.
Yeah.
I was born actually in England, and at the time parents were told to move away, don't tell anyone that your child is intersex, don't, like, keep it a secret. And for my mom, this was the first time in her life when she'd escaped a particularly traumatic upbringing, and she was living large as a nursing student in London, had friends and was like having a great time, and then had this intersex baby, and then they moved back to Ireland. So she had a lot of bitterness and resentment. And she was basically just kind of repulsed by me. So I grew up with that. So there, when you're intersex, like, not all of us are operated on. It's the ones at birth where we have a obviously ambiguous genitalia, like I did. But some variations get missed entirely, like a lot of Klinefelter people never get diagnosed. I also did not act in stereotypically male ways. I grew up in Tala. That's where I was raised. And a lot of, you know, no shade on anyone from Tala, but a lot of kids out there were into soccer and, you know, and I wanted to sit and sew and write poetry and do things like that. And I had more typically feminine interests, and there was a lot of stigma around that. So a lot of abuse. And I didn't, like, I didn't know what I was doing wrong. And I don't know whether my parents could have articulated what their problem was, just that I wasn't being a typical boy. So I had various theories. Like I said, for example, I was named after my aunt who died tragically in the 20s. I knew that story. So one of my theories on why I was different and why I was always getting into trouble was that I was possessed by the ghost of my dead aunt. That was one of the theories. So I'm like, it's not my fault. It's the ghost of my aunt who I'm possessed by, having particularly, like, stereotypical feminine interests and not particularly typical boyish interests. And this is why I'm getting in trouble. I mean, like, I was six, you know, but I started quote unquote self-harming at an early age. My first suicide attempt was about maybe around the age of seven, maybe. And it was just not a good scene. I mean, it was just kind of traumatized parents raising a child who they were traumatizing.
And in terms of then the treatment, especially of infants, for instance, intersex infants, we still haven't arrived at medical consensus on surgery, have we?
Well, that's the thing. Medics have. The doctors will be fine, and I'm sure the doctors were fine with what was done with me, but it's left me with a lifelong difficulties. Like, it's when I was a child, I found out pretty early that I would get in trouble after 5 minutes in the bathroom, but it takes me about 2.5 hours to pee. So I have a lot of kidney pains. And then when I go talk to the doctors about it, they're not educated on intersex variations outside of a small group of pediatric medical specialists. So they don't know how to help you. But it takes me about 2.5 hours to pee, and they destroy the sexual sensation in my genitals. I mean, they're operating on tiny babies. And also, you can't really fix what was done.
And obviously, it's, you know, there's a lot of medical issues around all of that that we unfortunately don't have time to delve deeply into. But just going back to what you were saying there about growing up in Tala in the 70s, for instance, and actually scratch that, not even just in Tala, but even in Ireland or beyond, I presume you didn't know anybody intersex.
As far as I knew, I was the only person like me in the world, because I mean, pre-internet, we had Encyclopedia Britannica, but that was it. So when I was 10, and my family had a construction business, and I would be made work on the sites from as far back as I can remember. I'm not complaining about it, but the thinking was that it would toughen me up. So drinking tea with the lads at the tea break, there was the first other trans and intersex person I ever discovered on the planet. Like, you know, after I discovered her, now there were two of us. But she was in a James Bond movie, For Your Eyes Only, for about half a second. And that was enough for the tabloids to destroy her life. She had a successful modeling career before that. Her name was Caroline Cossey. And I'm sitting in a tea shack with construction workers talking about all the ways they would murder this person if they met them in person. And here's 10-year-old me at the time, fully aware that they're talking about me, someone like me. But for me, I was super excited. And recently, Caroline Cossey's been sharing on our social media all of the newspapers from that time. But I had a whole scrapbook because, you know, I found someone else like me, and she was beautiful, and I wasn't alone. There was one more of me in the world.
But you're sitting in that little canteen with those builders, for instance. All you're going to feel is a sense of shame in a way, and that you have to keep that, as you say, in your head.
Well, the thing is, and I don't know whether it's the autism, but I've been aware from a very early age I was meant to feel shame around being intersex, and I don't, like, I don't particularly feel ashamed by being born different. Like, we're all different. We can't all be Jason Momoa or Jennifer Aniston or whoever it is supposed to be the ideal at the time. I'm quite okay being the thing that I am. Same with the trans thing. I was made very aware from a very early age that, I mean, long before I heard the word transgender, I was being beaten for asking Santa for the wrong toys, asking for Barbies. So, and that really kind of messes with your self-efficacy, because you start learning that the thing that you won't get in trouble for is asking for the thing that you don't want. So when you go to pick out clothes, pick what you don't want, and that has an effect. So, for example, I enjoyed knitting. I got in trouble for that. And even though there's many famous male bakers, I got in trouble for baking. I was not into sports. I'm still not into sports. I'm way uncoordinated. But I like to draw and read and write, and, you know, I'm like that. Which, you know, there's lots of boys who are like that too. It wasn't even just how I identified. I was identified by everyone around me as acting feminine and punished for it. So then before puberty, I was put on drugs, which were, but I was put on androgens pre-puberty, which caused a lot of very masculine development in a short space of time, which also, there was a lot of issues associated with that. So it really affected my sleep, for example, which I've been battling ever since. I've been battling what my doctor just recently described as various menopause symptoms for my entire life.
It's a sense of the suppression and repression go hand in hand, obviously, which is so damaging too. Belong to Addy recently published research just a few months ago, in fact, and it seems what you went through and what you felt in the 70s hasn't really changed a lot.
That's the thing. I mean, there was a brief window, I would say, up to about 2013, where things were looked like they were going to get a bit better. And in the wake of Obergefell v. Hodges in the US, very influential and powerful and very well-funded think tanks started thinking about how to roll things back. And it's become, as we all know, a much more intolerant society worldwide. The European Union put out research last year that showed, unsurprisingly, very high rates of violence and discrimination against transgender people, but also intersex people. And the thing is, you shouldn't actually know a person's intersex because you can't see their hormones, you can't see their chromosomes, you can't see their gonads, you can't see their sex organs typically. So, for example, I'm trans. I've never identified as male. I'm generally been treated 50-50. Some people treat me like, you know, and I don't really care. I get why they're confused. But you've got somebody with Klinefelter syndrome. I know of somebody recently who got attacked in a coffee shop and they identify as male, but they have wider hips and they have some breast growth and they got attacked by somebody screaming at them in a coffee shop about leaving those children alone. And for me, I'm expecting it when I walk out the door because of this trans moral panic, which does take a toll.
It's one of the least talked about elements of the LGBTQIA plus acronym, basically, isn't it? It's the least talked about.
The joke is that the I stands for invisible a lot of the time. Like some company put out an ad recently for Pride and they were like, the I stands for iconic, you know, and no, it doesn't. It stands for intersex. And while a lot of intersex people are actually heterosexual and cisgender, there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of queers there too, but also even the cisgender heterosexual intersex people suffer as a result. They suffer in many ways because there's the stigma. Like I know in my research, for example, my research was with older intersex people, people like myself, all across Europe. And for example, straight heterosexual intersex men, they've had a horrible time because they've been bullied for not being masculine enough. Their muscles and bodies didn't develop in a typical way. You live in a world where there's so much talk about, you know, genital prowess. And I know someone, for example, where he's a good friend of mine. Doctors left him with a 1 centimeter penis. And then afterwards, and I've read this in his medical records, he's one of the few people I know who actually have their intact medical records. But they when he was about 12, they're like, oops, we've discovered that he has a full working female reproductive system. But for us to tell him that now would be devastating for him. But meanwhile, it's been devastating because he's longed for relationships, but lived it so much in fear of anyone laughing at him when he takes his clothes off. And it's not his fault what doctors did to him as a baby. And he's not the only one. There's a lot of intersex kids. Like we hear about how important sports are, but there's so many kids who are so traumatized by their experience of changing with classmates and finding out that their bodies are not the same as theirs. And some of my participants talked about how that was the time when everyone stopped talking to them and when they started being treated differently than everybody else and started being ostracized. And, you know, school is pretty rough for a lot of us and we're not included in sex education. And then when we become adults, you know, doctors don't generally know. I mean, I've spoken recently with maybe one of Ireland's most famous GPs who claimed I was the first intersex person he'd ever met, which is definitely not true. I'm just the first one he was aware of. And he said that intersex was not covered in medical school. And we have very little cultural representation. So when I was growing up, there wasn't intersex cartoon characters, characters in movies. I mean, there's a smattering of Greek statues that look something like what I look like naked as an adult. But as a child, there wasn't really any role models for me to relate to. I didn't have a lot of positive cultural representation growing up.
You mentioned there are a lot of stigma. How can we go about reducing stigma? I'm thinking particularly about how people listening to this, feeling a sense of allyship can actually help in real terms.
I think, honestly, it's conversation. So, I mean, so amongst other things, so these days I'm a senior research fellow at the University of Huddersfield, but In the past, I owned a tattoo shop in Florida and another one in rural Texas. And I spent a lot of time talking to people about this, and it's interesting. So my wife comes from what would be considered a rural conservative background. Her family does anyway. And they had an intersex cousin who since passed, who was intersex, and the whole family knew and nobody cared. And recently there was a repairman in our apartment, and he, when we were talking, he was like, oh, wait, I think my wife has that variation. And people, everybody knows somebody who's intersex. I mean, if you know somebody with red hair, you know somebody who's intersex probably too. But again, they may not know it because it's so underdiagnosed. But I was just born a bit different. It's really okay. Same as not everybody can be your favorite soccer player. It's okay to have some people who come out a little bit atypical. I mean, the world needs those too.
Absolutely. You mentioned there conversation is key. But a lot of that conversation around intersex, as we've been talking about, is focused on babies and adolescents. You also mentioned you're doing research, important research, into the experience of older intersex people. What have you found?
I'd say a thing that was very surprising for me is how little the experience has changed from country to country to country to country all across Europe. And I only talk to people in Europe, but mine was like the first study that wasn't done from a medicalized and pathologizing standpoint. But a lot of abuse, a lot of bullying, kids getting punished by their teachers as well as, you know, they're like, for example, one of my participants, they had some game where the boys had to take their shirts off. He developed breast growth, the gynecomastia, which was very common with his variation. And because he refused to take his shirt off, he was caned in front of all the other pupils. And then the whole period of socialization, you're a bit ostracized because everybody's talking about sex. And maybe your sexuality is different because of your hormone levels. You're not jumping in the lake with your friends because you don't want them to see you naked or see that your genitals are different or maybe smaller or different than what would be typically expected, for example. So then, and again, like I said, we have very high suicide rates, very high rates of attempted suicide. It's impossible to gauge how much because of record keeping. I have a friend doing a study in France, and I think it was like something like 40% of participants had attempted suicide. I mean, I would be included amongst those numbers. But
unconscious, it can all probably sound and feel a bit bleak. I just wanted to draw attention to the fact that you are an intersex person who has a wife, two children, a fulfilling professional career. So positive outcomes of a sort are possible.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. You always have to take in, I mean, it's basically whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. The people who did tend to experience rejection and again are still alive went and found chosen families and were able to be a more full version of themselves. And they seem to be able to find, they weren't repressing themselves down into a box in which they never fit. Like some of the participants who I spoke to who were in the greatest pain were heterosexual, straight intersex men. They experienced more isolation. They would talk about when they would go to intersex conferences, and there's of course stigma for intersex women, but they would find that there was more intersex women, and they want to hang out with other men who can relate. And there's a lot more, I think, stigma around masculinity and masculine culture, and that's the culture in which they've got to try and fit in. For me, I was popped like a pimple from a very early age. I never fit in. And then I moved, I mean, when I was 10, I saw Fort Apache, the Bronx, and there was queers in the movie in New York. So I'm like, that's where I'm going. So that is where I went. And I found community there. And I found people who were like me and acceptance. And nobody really cared that I was a bit of a weirdo. I ended up with children. I didn't think I could have children. I ended up with children. I ended up a single parent of twins until I met my wife, the love of my life, when I was, you know, when the children were about 12. And I think if I hadn't had the children, maybe I wouldn't be here. If I hadn't met my wife, I wouldn't be here. I'm really lucky for all the reasons I'm unlucky. That's one of those things. And everything that's good in my life has come from something that's been actually pretty hard. So I am really fortunate. And there is a temptation to focus on intersex joy, but there's barriers to it. A couple of years ago, I went to a big community intersex meetup in Paris, and it was really interesting considering the things that unite us are often some pretty horrific experiences. And it's across more than 40 variations, but there was so much love and joy amongst everybody there. But there's a lot of barriers because a lot of people are still talking to their doctors and they don't know anything about intersex. I have a friend who's finding intersex community for the first time in his 70s, and he's felt like he was never going to find anyone like him until, like, for his whole life. That's too long. Like, intersex kids should know that other intersex kids exist, but there needs to be better intersex mental health resources, because unfortunately I don't think they're going to stop doing these surgeries anytime soon. And I've greatly suffered. I don't know anybody who's happy about the surgeries. A lot of us feel an intense sense of violation. There's high rates of disability associated with my surgeries in particular. There's research on that. The United Nations declared what is done to us as babies as a form of torture in 2013. But meanwhile, when we go to find a mental health professional, for the most part, they're not educated. And I'm very fortunate currently to have found probably the first competent therapist I've ever encountered in a long life of searching, who is a trauma specialist. And that's something that would be particularly helpful and should be available to everybody who's intersex, honestly, after the childhoods a lot of us have, you know.
Addie, can I just say thank you so much for sharing your story and highlighting an issue that I don't think I've ever heard discussed in such detail on radio. And I'm very grateful for that. Thank you indeed. Also, details of organisations that can help are available at rte.ie/support. That's it for this edition of Out and Proud, presented by me, Trevor Keegan. Production, of course, by Johnny Lanagoyne, and the series producer is Jack Murphy.